For critical information ignored by the mainstream media, log on to davidicke.com/headlines now.
From Feature Story News in Washington, I'm Nina Maria Potts with the latest world news. Donald Trump is accusing Hillary Clinton of lying and her supporters of lying as fresh allegations of inappropriate conduct are revealed. Karina Virginia told a very emotional story about how Donald Trump saw her in a parking lot in 1998 after the U.S. Open tennis tournament, walked up to her and grabbed her, leaving Karina shaken and humiliated. Simon Marks reports from Las Vegas on the latest allegations leveled by Karina Virginia.
She broke down in tears during the news conference that she held to make the allegation. The Trump campaign is likely to reject her claims. Donald Trump has insisted that he's never met any of the more than 10 women who are now accusing him of sexual assault, and he insists that their stories are all part of a conspiracy aimed at keeping him out of the White House.
Donald Trump, meanwhile, has told his supporters he will accept the result of the presidential election if he wins. The Republican nominee was speaking a day after refusing to say during the final debate he would accept the outcome, whatever the result. He told supporters in Ohio he also reserved the right to file a legal challenge if he thinks the election is rigged. Trump said he expects to win and therefore would be happy with the result.
I would like to promise and pledge to all of my voters and supporters, and to all of the people of the United States, that I will totally accept the results of this great and historic presidential election if I win.
The U.S. says it's baffled by an announcement by Philippine President Rodrigo Duterte, who says he has realigned his country with China and separated from the United States. His comments were made during a visit to China and in a week when a dozen anti-American protesters were injured outside the U.S. Embassy in the Philippines. U.S. correspondent William Denzelow reports.
Addressing a crowd of around 200 Chinese and Philippine business people, Rodrigo Duterte announced that the United States has lost and that he's separating from them and realigning with China. Duterte took office on June 30th and relations with the US soured after they criticised his heavy-handed war on drugs. Despite a long-standing dispute with Beijing over the South China Sea, Duterte believes the two nations can improve relations. This week, anti-American protesters convened at the US Embassy in the Philippine capital Manila, calling for an end to what they see as an unequal relationship with the US. 12 were injured when a police van drove into the crowd. William Denslow, New York.
From Bureaus Worldwide, this is FSN.
Thank you very much, Nina Maria. Good to hear from you. Welcome to the programme. It's the 20th. Hope I said that right. The 20th of October 2016, which means it's Thursday, and it's Thursday's Richie Allen Show, which will be brought to you live in association with davidicke.com. My name is Richie Allen. As always, I'm delighted to be with you. Let's get on with the program.
Broadcasting live from the great city of Manchester, England, this is the Richie Allen Show on davidicke.com. The Richie Allen Show, brought to you in association with davidicke.com. And now, live from Manchester, England, here is Richie Allen.
Now, James Perloff is first up tonight. Terrific journalist James, and author, of course. Don't need to give him too much of an introduction. He's going to be reflecting on the final US presidential debate, which took place yesterday, and today's allegations against Donald Trump. Another woman has come forward and said she was groped by Trump, this time at the US Open tennis tournament back in the late 1990s. So what about the independent media folk sucked in by Trump? Is it all about their hatred of Hillary Clinton, or is there more to it? I'll put those questions to James this hour. And this week, you might remember earlier in the week, we talked about Pamela Anderson launching a campaign to raise awareness about how damaging addiction to porn can be. Now, an old friend of mine, the academic and author Gail Dines, joins me from Boston. Gail is a terrific commentator, terrifically well briefed on this subject. She wrote the groundbreaking book Pornland, How Porn Has Changed, in fact, How Porn Has Hijacked Our Sexuality. The book examines the way porn shapes and limits sexual imaginations and behaviours. Now, I told you earlier in the week, you might remember, that studies have shown that porn addiction actually rewires the brain and, amongst other things, causes a loss of empathy in children exposed to it. I don't think pornography gets much coverage in the independent media. That's not to criticise it, but I don't think it does. So I'm looking forward to covering this subject with, it's a very serious one, with Gail Dines in hour two. As usual, email richie@richieallen.co.uk, but tweet me. It's at Richie Allen Show on Twitter. As always, and I say it sincerely, I look forward to reading your tweets and getting a kind of a feel for what you think about these subjects. We're broadcasting live on Alternate Current Radio on Fab Radio 2 in Manchester, davidicke.com, of course. David is in Italy this weekend. That's a sellout, but the European Tour tickets are available. Go to theworldwidewakeup.com and find out more there. As it's Thursday, we will be repeating Monday's wonderful healing meditation from Kim Hutchison of livingasyoursoul.com. It'll follow me at 10 p.m. BST. I shouldn't say that, so I shouldn't, but I'm live, so I can say that. It'll follow this program, and it is a Channels of Illumination meditation entitled Your Soul's Love Pattern of Reality. Kim is great. That follows this program. And speaking of wonderful people that we're very fond of on this particular programme, how about a big happy birthday for the terrific Mark Bajerski? What a legend Mark is. Wonderful man. He's been on the programme before. I'm sure he will be again in the future. And it's his birthday today. I know he's celebrating it with his lovely wife Susie. I don't know if Nico and China, his children, are around, but I'm sure they'll be very happy for him. And I know you love Mark as well. So a big happy birthday to him. Good stuff, Mark. All the best to you today. What is it? 6.5, nearly 7 minutes past the hour. Now, I was away yesterday, as you know. Aaron Callan, the lovely Aaron Callan, has been with me working on this programme from the very beginning. In fact, back in May 2014, he helped me launch the show. Well, he prepared me to launch the programme, which we did back in September 2014. But I've known Aaron since television, TPV television in London. Really, really good guy. And I'd be at a loss, really, if he wasn't to be involved in the programme one way or another, because he was there from day one and he's a good guy. I mentioned in the week that his mother, Marion, passed away last week. Very young she was. She was only 62. Now, I didn't know Marion at all. Aaron had mentioned to me that she was unwell, but I never met the lady at all. But, you know, Aaron, from time to time, would mention her. And we, as I said, I didn't know her personally. But I went to the funeral yesterday. For obvious reasons, Aaron is a friend, and I wanted to pay my respects to him and to his wife, Vicky, and to their children. And it was a very interesting experience. I stood in the funeral home in Haslingden yesterday, north of Bury. And there were a lot of people there. She was very loved by her family, and she was very well thought of in her community. There's no doubt about that. You know that when you attend funerals. I think Marion worked for the council in Bury at one time in her life. Now, a friend of the family's delivered the eulogy, and it was a very lovely, heartfelt eulogy. It's obvious that he'd spent time with the family. And I know you might say that's obvious, that's what you would do, but he'd obviously paid attention to Claire and to Aaron and to the family and to Marion's husband, of course, Aaron's dad. Now, he talked about Marion and how she was instrumental in the setting up of the Manchester United Disabled Supporters Association, and how she'd been at the forefront of lobbying the club, not only Manchester United, but other clubs, to treat disabled supporters with equality and to improve match day facilities. Marion was disabled herself, but it didn't define her or stop her. Aaron said to me that him and Claire never wanted for anything, that their mother was always there. And I was very moved by this. I was moved listening to this, and I'll tell you why in a second. I'm building up to something. The eulogy delivered by this lovely man, a spiritualist who knew Marion and gotten to know her over the last couple of years, they said she was a fantastic organiser and administrator. and she was known around the country. When she would travel away to watch Manchester United, she'd be acknowledged by the matchday police and officials from other clubs. And she was, you know, very important and had done a lot of work, was a pioneer really in helping disabled people have a better experience when they went to matches, as I already mentioned a second ago. Now, I was at the back standing and listening to this, and as I was listening to it, some people were nodding, but others were like shaking their head and were like, wow, I didn't know that. And it got me thinking. As I said, I didn't know the lady at all. And it got me thinking, deeply thinking, and as I was travelling home late in the afternoon, travelling back to Manchester, it got me thinking that we often don't know whom or who we're standing next to, or who's standing in front of us, or who's standing behind us. We take people for granted, I think. We judge people on their appearance. You know, a guy sitting near you on a bus might be a bit dishevelled, might look a bit odd, a bit strange, and we make a judgment. You know, he could be anybody. He could have saved a life yesterday, you know, in his job. He could be raising a couple of kids on his own and breaking his back to feed them. But you wouldn't have a clue, would you? Because you just wouldn't ask, or, you know, you wouldn't start a conversation. And I was thinking on the bus on the way back to Manchester yesterday, many years ago, I was lectured by a man called Harry Dunphy, who worked for Carr Communications in Ireland. Bunny Carr, legendary Irish broadcaster, used to present a quiz show in the 1960s and 1970s called Quicksilver. But he had a communications company, and people who worked for him often trained people who worked in the media and, you know, worked with journalists and what have you. And Harry Dunphy said to us once, and I hadn't remembered it or thought of it for a long time until yesterday. He said, seek out the quiet people, those who don't say very much, those who keep themselves to themselves, the people that society tells you are different. Get to know those people, hear their stories, because they're always the most interesting people. And I'll never forget, he said, how can you say you want to be a journalist if you dismiss people, if you don't want to hear from everybody? Imagine what you might miss. And he was right, you know, and he related that to growing up in school, and there was always a kid in school in a class who was quiet or didn't fit in or wasn't involved. And, you know, he made us uncomfortable asking questions like, well, why didn't you find out more about that particular person? And listening to the stories about a woman I never met yesterday at a funeral service, this disabled woman whom you mightn't give a second look to. You know, you might not ever give her a second look, or you might not be comfortable talking to her if you met her on public transport. But yet she played a huge part in lobbying the most famous sports team in the world to take disabled supporters seriously. So I was reminded of that old lecture by Harry Dunphy. I thought I'd share that. And then I thought, would it be over the top to issue a challenge to you? And I thought, no, it probably wouldn't be. I'm going to issue you a challenge, and you don't have to take it up, and I'll never know whether you do or whether you don't, but I'm going to challenge you anyway. Why don't you, at some stage in the next couple of weeks, invite somebody who lives in your neighbourhood, whom you don't really know much about, invite them around for a drink, or if their religious persuasion, you know, precludes that, offer them around for a cup of tea, and introduce yourself to them, and find out a little bit about them and get to know them. I'm issuing you with that challenge now. Now, I'll take a sip of that cup myself. It's something we do regularly, Carlin and myself. We do seek out people who live around us, and we do invite them around. So I'm not asking you to do anything I wouldn't ordinarily do myself. But you never know, you know, who's around you, who's living near you, who's living next door to you, and what a difference they might make in your life. And the final thing on Aaron's mother, whom, as I said, I never met. You know, listening to the stories about her and all the work she did and the amazing work she did, I couldn't help thinking she'd been a great fit on this programme. A great interviewee. What a shame that I never got to know her. We'll move on. Let's move on. Right. Now, the Independent newspaper today, Parliament has the right to reject the final Brexit deal. Number 10 has indicated for the first time, Theresa May indicated, that Parliament does have the right to reject any final Brexit deal. That raises the possibility that Britain's EU exit could be halted. I told you. Downing Street agreed it's very likely that MPs and peers will be given a vote Once the withdrawal negotiations are finished, after the issue arose in the High Court. The statement after May, Theresa May repeatedly refused to give ground on demands for Parliament to have a say on Brexit, immediately triggered furious debate about the possible consequences. A pro-EU Tory said, "It's a victory for all those who believe in the right of Parliament to represent the interests of our constituents." Now, I'm not going to say too much about this now, other than I told you so. This government, the opposition party, the other parties, forget UKIP for a minute, but the main parties, the established parties in the UK, they have no intentions of ever leaving the European Union, despite the fact that 52% of the British people said they wanted out. I told you that. That's all I'm saying on that. More on that in coming programmes, undoubtedly. Here's one that will make you laugh. The so-called Islamic State group is a brutal opponent in the fight for Mosul, the head of Coalition Forces for Iraq and Syria told the BBC. US Lieutenant General Stephen Townsend was speaking on the sidelines of the battle to retake the Iraqi city from the jihadist group. Townsend said ISIS was adaptable, creative and cunning. He might well know. It's his intelligence agencies that created them. Unbelievable. Iraqi forces said today they had recaptured the town of Bartella, less than 15 kilometres or 10 miles east of Mosul. The town had seen fierce IS resistance, with reports of several suicide car bombs by militants in response to the special forces advance. Iraqi Prime Minister Haider al-Abadi said on Thursday the operation to retake Mosul was progressing faster than planned. Yes, Mr. al-Abadi, it's also creating thousands of refugees as well. Thousands. And while all this is going on, you might be aware two British warships shadowed an aircraft carrier and other Russian naval ships as they passed the UK heading for Syria. The aircraft carrier is called Admiral Kuznetsov and its task force. They're on a course to sail through the North Sea and English Channel. A Ministry of Defence spokesman said the ships would be man-marked every step of the way. NATO, though, said Russia had the right to operate in international waters. Now, on Russophobia in Western media, incidentally, I saw an interesting piece on this on RT today. Freddie Gray is the deputy editor of The Spectator. He went on RT to explain their latest edition, which has Putin on the cover, amid talk of invasions and propaganda. This is Freddie Gray, but first of all, you'll hear the RT presenter.
Okay, you're not doing this, but why do you think other UK media certainly appears too? You just look at the headlines for some of the red tops. It's all Russia doom and gloom. The warship's now going down towards the Mediterranean. That, for instance, there's no other way it can actually really get there. That's being seen as some huge, awful thing at the moment. Why is this at the moment?
Well, I think there's a sort of hysteria about Russia, which I think is some deep psychic need for an enemy, which Putin is filling very neatly for us at the moment. And I think a lot of it might be to do with the American election. You know, you've got Hillary Clinton's going to come in very soon, it looks like. And I think, you know, she's very much ratcheting up the aggression against Putin. And so you're seeing a sort of game of chicken emerging in which certainly American hawks and British hawks are getting very hysterical. Theresa May said some slightly hysterical things. And you're seeing a sort of squaring off that is potentially very, very dangerous.
Well, of course, it is potentially very dangerous. We know that. We know that, don't we? So, what's happened there? Oh, yeah. I thought my script had disappeared on me. My script, my bullet points. So, Freddie Gray there saying that there is undoubtedly Russophobia in the British media. And it's hysterical. And he alluded to the hysteria of recent comments by Theresa May. Now, on Syria and what's going on there, you know, if you've listened to this programme before, I'm very fond of Gayan Chichikian, who works for RT in the United States. Now, she's been asking the US State Department why the hypocrisy, why condemn Russia's actions in eastern Aleppo for endangering civilians, but support the offensive in Mosul, which endangers citizens. Clear question, right? Over to Gayanne. Have a listen.
The US view for Eastern Aleppo, as I understand it, is that going after terrorists there is not worth the suffering of civilians. Why the difference in US reaction or approach?
With respect to Mosul, as with Aleppo, there's an urgency to the situation on the ground there, a military operation, the size and scale and scope of the effort to liberate Mosul. Requires a good deal of prudent planning to make sure it's a success. And one of the aspects of that, and I talked at length about it yesterday, so I don't want to necessarily go over it again, is how do we deal with and how do we prepare ourselves to deal with the inevitable humanitarian effects of this operation.
Yeah, there was no way he was answering that question from Gayanne Chichikian there. Just completely ignored the question at hand. Right. Lots about Trump coming up shortly. The women, the debate yesterday. I know you'll have plenty to say on that. Do tweet at Richie Allen Show. Email Richie at richieallen.co.uk. As always, delighted to hear from you. What is it? 20 minutes past the hour. Very quick break. Back with plenty more in a couple of minutes.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
Do you want to release the full potential of your soul consciousness and find out how to experience that power in all areas of your life now? Go to livingasyoursoul.com for free guidance with in-depth how-to articles, free healing meditations of creation recordings, free soul solutions, and much, much more. livingasyoursoul.com, making the profound practical.
Broadcasting the information the mainstream media won't touch. This is the Richie Allen Show in association with davidicke.com.
And you're very welcome back to it. We are broadcasting live on alternatecurrentradio.com. Do check out that terrific website. There's a chat room there which is always vibrant. A lot of opinion in there when the programmes are on air. Fab Radio 2 in Manchester, fabradiointernational.com, the TuneIn app, of course, davidicke.com and all the rest of it. Just want to mention yesterday, our YouTube subscription went over 40,000. So we've now got 40,400 subscribers, which is a wonderful thing. Thanks to those of you who subscribe to YouTube. It is a very important resource for people because of the time zone we go out live, it doesn't suit every one of our listeners to listen live. So a lot of people get it from YouTube and a lot of people get the podcast from podomatic.com. Thanks to Simon Stewart for the work that he does uploading our interviews on youtube.com. Subscribe to the channel. Just go to youtube.com and quite simply, while there, just look for The Richie Allen Show. Press subscribe. I think you might need to have a YouTube account, but YouTube accounts are free and you can set them up with, you know, any email address. It doesn't have to be your own personal email address, but any old address will allow you to set up an account. And while there, you can comment on the videos as well. Funny thing that somebody said to me this morning, some of the things said about you on the YouTube videos, Richie's, are dreadful. Why do you allow comments on the videos? I don't read the comments. Very rarely, sometimes somebody will send me a message to say there is a comment that you might want to take a close look at. You know, it might be somebody looking for some information or they might need help or whatever like that. But generally, I certainly don't look at the comments. Anyway, I don't care. Some content creators disable the comments and they've got very good reasons for doing that. But we prefer not to. We leave the videos open for comment. People can say whatever they want. I generally don't pay attention to it, good, bad or indifferent. 24 minutes past the hour. So, James Perloff is standing by then. We're going to be talking, obviously, about the debate yesterday and the increasing allegations against Donald Trump. This is Harry Nielsen. Welcome to the show.
Everybody's talking at me. I don't hear words they're saying. Only the echoes of my mind. People stopping still. Can't see their faces.
music from Harry Nilsson and Everybody's Talking at Me on the Richie Allen Show in association with davidicke.com. A lot of comments coming in, so I'll read a few of them before we say hi to James. Spirit Samba tweets, evening Richie, evening to you, evening to Scott Cornish as well. Luga tweets, thankfully my work and my life experience means I do not do that. I don't pigeonhole people or make decisions about people based on their appearance. I feel the energy of a person and go by that, says Luga. Alan Bristow says hi to Aaron and to his family and friends, and hopes that they experienced a beautiful spiritual farewell to his mother Marion. I think they did. Hi to Woody. Hi to Alex Watson as well on Twitter. How you doing, Alex? John tweets, the thing is that the best people like Marion with great hearts never really self-publicise because they are just genuine and amazing. Absolutely right. I echo that. Gail says, I live in a small town and I talk to a lot of people every day when I walk. Pixie, my dog. Stevie tweets, that's the best thing you've ever said. Love your neighbour. God bless, it's all about love, says Stevie. Hi to Alex Doust as well. On Brexit, Alex tweets, funny how people say Parliament is sovereign and has to have the final say, yet when it comes to fracking, totally the opposite, says Alex. That's a brilliant point. That is Alex Doust. Hi to Faisal as well, and to everybody else who's tweeting and listening to the programme. Well, the final presidential debate took place last night. The pollsters were out in force. You can hear nothing else apart from the occasional report about Mosul in Iraq. It's all the debate and it's all Donald Trump. Another woman late this afternoon has come out and given a press conference, and she said that back in the late 1990s she was assaulted by Donald Trump at a US Open tennis match or just after. What's really going on? Well, our next guest, no stranger to you, he's a brilliant author and journalist. The Shadows of Power, The Council on Foreign Relations and the American Decline is the definitive book about think tanks and who they really are, not just the Council on Foreign Relations and what is really behind them and the power they exercise in DC. He's also the author of Truth is a Lonely Warrior, Tornado in a Junkyard and The Case Against Darwin. And you can find out more about him, of course, and read him at jamesperloff.com. James, welcome back to the programme. Always great to be with you.
Well, it's great to be with you, and I'm sure it's great for your listeners to be with you, Richie, because you're such a listener-friendly host.
Well, thanks for that. You're very kind. You always say nice things. I know you're up to your eyes, too, James. I know you get a lot of requests like this around debates and around some of the news coming out. What did you make of the debate last night? I've watched the highlights or the lowlights of it, and then, further revelations coming out today by a woman who claims that she was groped by Trump in the late 90s. What have you made of all of this?
Well, there's a great meme that shows Anderson Cooper interviewing Miss Piggy of the Muppets, claiming that Trump grumped her, just to show how desperate they're getting. But last night's debate, I was watching it with my son, and you know what stood out to me the most, and so it was the first thing I tweeted on it, was that during the debate, Hillary was constantly looking down as she spoke. She would look down and look up and look down and look up. And I said to my son, she's reading. These well-pronounced remarks of hers are not extemporaneous. They're being read. And by contrast, Trump did not look down. He would face the camera or the host or Hillary. The very first debate, which was moderated by Lester Holt, I wrote my last blog post on that. It's called "Was the Holt Moderated Debate Rigged for Hillary?" And I give seven evidences that it was. Some of that carried over into last night's debate, but not all of it did, because so many things were picked up by the great alt media people in that first debate that they could not play many of the same tricks.
I can't argue with you when you say that you think the debates have been rigged. I think you're right. But I'm confused by this, James, because you might remember, you might not remember, but when we've spoken about the election before, I remain convinced that Donald Trump is a stooge, whether knowingly or unknowingly. I think he was handpicked by the Clinton family to stand against Hillary. I was speaking to my producer, Claire, today, and I speculated with Claire that Hillary is so toxic because she's such a vile criminal. I mean, this is one of the great crime families of the world. They should join, they should call it the six New York crime families, not the five families, and send, put the Clintons in there. So I believe that, you know, Paul Ryan, or even Jeb Bush, God love Jeb, or even, they could have got Newt Gingrich to run against Hillary. I think anybody would have beaten Hillary. I think, I really do believe that. She's so toxic. So I think this guy was handpicked. Now, I'm guessing you don't agree with me.
Well, that's been a theory that's been out there for a long time, and I do want to make clear at the outset of the show, or my appearance on your show, Richie, that I've never been a Trump man or a Trump fan, or has never been someone who I paid particular attention to. I was always a Ron Paul advocate. You know, Ron Paul was an outspoken opponent of the Federal Reserve Bank, the equivalent of your Bank of England here in America. And, you know, he fought it for 30 years in Congress. You knew where he stood, and he was a strict anti-interventionist. He would not have allowed us to go to war if he were president. And he was someone who had my greatest respect. Now, it has been pointed out that from the very beginning that Trump might have been a setup to draw the alternative people to him, but have him make such blunt remarks that he would offend women and immigrants in such a way that the vote, the balance of the vote would go to Hillary. I don't know. I'm seeing that the populist voters really are gathering around him. And I will say this much, Richie, that although I'm not a Trump man per se, he is saying some truthful things about Hillary Clinton. And I do want to also say that I'm supporting the man at this point simply because Hillary Clinton is so vicious, so dishonest, and would be such a disaster for the peace of not only the United States, but the entire world, that this is a case where, although I don't believe in general in the practice of support the lesser evil, in this case, I think the greater evil is so bad. I made a meme the other day of Darth Vader saying, vote for Hillary. Oh, come on, let's not take this dark side stuff over the top, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, she's over the top evil. And I'm going to say, yeah, I'm supporting Trump simply because we'd throw a monkey wrench in the works. And clearly what they wanted at the outset was a battle between Jeb Bush and Hillary. And I think that because there was such a popular uprising against the establishment, somebody had to emerge, and that turned out to be Donald Trump.
I believe, you see, if all things were equal and fair, which they aren't. I mean, how much did you laugh the other day when Obama dismissed Trump's claims that the election could be rigged, and Obama was incredulous? You know, what? Rigged? How could he say that about the United States of America? And I mean, I remember you talking about Ohio in 2004. Let's not forget Florida in 2000, where tens of thousands of African Americans were struck off the rolls by Jeb Bush's best friend, Catherine Harris. So, I mean, it's absolutely crazy. But I do think this. Hillary is vile. The Clinton family is vile. Everything about them is vile. There's no doubt about that. But what distresses me is the amount of people, and I obviously don't include you in this. If this was you, you wouldn't be here. You know, no, you wouldn't. I'm a guy who believes in all opinions. But some of the independent media jumping on every woman that has made an allegation against Trump and insinuating that every one of them has been bought by, you know, those puppet masters behind Hillary is ludicrous. Of course they do things like that. This is what campaign people do. It's disgusting. It's a filthy business. But Donald Trump, the idea that Trump was, you know, or is somehow above or was above groping women or sexually threatening women is laughable. Of course he did. He was famous for it going way back. He was famous for being, you know, heavy-handed with women. And I don't mean heavy-handed in terms of beating women, but heavy-handed in demanding sex from women, in forcing himself on women. And I just don't get this nonsense that, you know, he wouldn't have done that. And all of these women are fake. What do you say to that, James?
Well, I do think that the it is undoubtedly true that he's you know, he certainly is a number of marriages indicate, you know, a promiscuous past. And I don't doubt that most men in positions of financial power have abused themselves with women in the past. But the thing is that I've noticed something about the Clinton campaign is that they seek out things that will tend to neutralize the most serious charges against the Clintons. Now, with Bill Clinton, it's been well established for many decades that he's been a rapist and a sexual assaulter. And those allegations go back many years. What is suspect about the Trump allegations is that they've arisen so recently, in fact, almost timed to coincide with the WikiLeaks releases. So I have to say that there may be truth in some of these things, but it certainly would appear that the motivation behind their coming about is purely political and expedient.
We're getting loads of tweets. I'll just read a few. Folks, you got to check out James's website. It's jamesperloff.com. Perloff with two Fs, P-E-R-L-O-F-F. A terrific resource for information. Links to James' books there as well. Sean McDonald tweets this evening, mate. Does James have any thoughts on Trump ending up in Hillary's administration? Maybe like foreign affairs. Now, of course, he won't get foreign affairs, but he might get trade. He might get enterprise. Now, that's not too far-fetched, James. If you agree with me, now, not everybody agrees with me, of course, but I've speculated about this before, that they'll kiss and make up when she wins and the Donald will get a position. What do you think?
Well, there seems to be such hostility between them, it's hard to imagine. But on the other hand, we have to remember Bernie Sanders and the hostility between them, and now he's stumping for Hillary. And you could go back to the 1940 presidential campaign, which is before even my time. But you had Wendell Willkie come out of nowhere to become the Republican candidate, a little like Trump. He was a businessman, and he'd been a Democrat until that year, and suddenly became a Republican, suddenly had the backing of Wall Street. But after the campaign was over and after he made many denunciations of Franklin D. Roosevelt, who was the incumbent who won that election, he then did join the Roosevelt administration and became a roving ambassador for FDR. I can't picture Trump doing that right now, but again, we've got precedent before us. So you might be right.
Yeah, I'm going to read a few more of these tweets. Obviously, this is hot stuff, James. You won't be surprised. Sean Hinchcliffe tweets, Trump versus Clinton is like a reality television show. Trump, though, is right. It will be rigged in favor of Hillary, the Antichrist Clinton. Faisal tweets, Faisal tweets that he votes for Trump because the media corporations are so dead against him. If nothing else, it might send them a message, says Faisal. I don't know if Faisal is... has got the vote. I think Faisal might be in Britain, but I understand it. Stevie tweets that Trump is a Zionist puppet, a Zionazi puppet, in fact, he calls Trump. Dean Smith tweets, the global circus of the two clowns about to be president. What the F? Deals, laws, bills are being passed while people are distracted. Massive, massive interest in this, unsurprisingly. My take, James, all along has been to be sometimes very critical, but others mildly critical, of friends and colleagues in the independent media who've thrown their weight behind Trump. Because it's my contention, and we're going to talk about the House of Rothschild now, and why they are so determined that Hillary Clinton will be the next president. It's my contention that they always choose both sides of every argument, and again, whether knowingly or unknowingly, Trump has been chosen to play his part in it. And I don't understand why so many indie media stalwarts who for years have said the system has to be destroyed, must be torn down, because we can't succeed through the system. Why now so many of them are abandoning that principle and saying, oh, well, we should support this guy. Now, you've articulated very well why you would throw your support behind Trump, so I'm not going to ask you to repeat that. But that's what I feel. You know, and I don't believe they need to rig the election. I believe all of this has been carefully orchestrated. I mean, James, look, Trump has been a sexual predator. He has been. And I believe that even the worst private investigator ever, you don't have to be Mike Hammer, for example, the worst PI of all time, would have found this stuff on Trump, James. So how did he get through the process from the very beginning? You understand where I'm coming from? I don't buy any of this.
He certainly had access to the media from the very beginning. This is one thing I found suspect about him. Ron Paul was really shut out of the media. It was very difficult for him to get any kind of appearance. But from the very beginning, even though the media would sharply disagree with him, He did have entree from the very beginning of his campaign to the highest circles of mainstream media. But that said, I think one reason why people are jumping on the Trump bandwagon, Richie, is the fact that he is enunciating things that people in alt media have been saying for a long time about the Clinton Foundation, and occasionally even pop a soundbite about the Federal Reserve or ISIS that is correct. And so I think the very fact that this gets aired on before tens of millions of TV viewers is encouraging. Actually, it's encouraging to me to see some of the truth about the Clintons coming out. There's no question that they want Hillary in. But I agree that Trump, nobody gets to the top of the financial heap without the approval of the powers that be. And I think a very good video, one that I saw early on during Trump's campaign that was very educational and informative, was Brother Nathaniel's video. It's called Trump's Deck of Jewish Cards. And he pointed out in there that Trump had a lot of IOUs. He was bailed out by a Zionist billionaire named Carl Icahn. Then he became the only American celebrity to do a Israeli television election commercial for Benjamin Netanyahu. And you probably don't have to ask me what I think of Netanyahu. And of course, Trump's daughter converted to Judaism to marry into the Jewish billionaire Kushner family. And these are all things that Brother Nathaniel, who himself was raised Jewish and converted to Christianity, has brought out about Trump's campaign. That said, Hillary is still the most evil skank out there and is still the Rothschild choice. So, you know, I'm glad that he's saying these things and that there's people hearing about it. And I hope that actually Hillary does not get the vote, even though we know that with the electronic voting, and we know that there's Soros connections to a lot of the what's called Smartmatic voting machines that 16 states are using, that even if the majority of Americans did vote for Trump, it would take a very strong majority to persuasively get him the election victory.
That was a very strong word you used there to describe Hillary Clinton. I'm surprised that you, a man of your experience and maturity, and I don't feel like admonishing you, because I believe everybody's the right to say what they think, but that's a bit harsh to use a term like that, isn't it? Don't we become as bad as them when we use those words? Or am I
which,
wrong?
Which words was it that I used?
Skank.
I had to look that word up. I think it just means a sleazy person, but it's been increasingly used in the vernacular of the alt media recently to describe Hillary. So I just kind of picked it up too, you know. When you hang around the people, you pick up their vernacular, right? So, let's talk about why Hillary is the Rothschild choice.
Well, just before you do that, yeah. I'm just going to remind our listeners of something Freddie Gray said today. Freddie Gray is the deputy editor of The Spectator magazine, which is a widely read political commentary magazine in the UK. And he went on RT because RT were a bit put out by the cover of The Spectator and an article in there that talked unfavourably about Putin. But in fact, there were two articles in The Spectator. One was very critical of Western media hysteria, and the other was very critical of Putin. So there was a bit of balance in the magazine. But anyway, James, Freddie Gray basically said that, to paraphrase what he said, I'm not going to play the clip again because I'll have to dig it out, but he basically said that she is very, 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 very hostile towards Putin and towards Russia, and that there's a lot of concern about a Hillary Clinton presidency and what that might mean for security certainly in the next couple of years. And that's where we're going to go now. It's 15 and a half minutes to the top of the hour. James is going to stay with us for another 10 or 12 minutes to talk about this. Is it about the Middle East and plans for the region? Is that why they're hell-bent on her becoming the president?
Well, I think that the Middle East itself is something that Hillary and Trump pretty much probably mostly agree on. Now, Trump did say something positive in the second debate, which he says he'd like to work with Putin to fight ISIS. And last night he kind of backed off on that, and I was wondering why, and I realized I think it's because Hillary had been implying so much that he was working for Putin that he didn't want to make a pro-Putin remark. But, of course, that is a sensible approach if our enemy is ISIS, and we know that the United States creates these groups. But if we're supposed to be fighting terrorism, it does make sense to work with the Russians and not to generate a potential situation where, you know, something as drastic and horrific as a nuclear war could occur.
The tweets are flying in on this. Everybody agrees that she's the chosen one and that she is because of exactly what you just articulated there, James. But again, I'm not playing the devil's advocate. Again, I do believe that. It's a funny one. I'm finding it difficult to articulate my point because I believe that there might also be a considered opinion amongst those private central banking families that Donald, because of his ego, because of who he is, he'd have been like putty in their hands, James, wouldn't he? What I'm saying is, I don't see why there's a feeling that they couldn't have furthered this agenda with Donald there, even if he is headstrong, and even if he does have opinions that we might share or align ourselves with. You know, this guy could be managed easily, because of his personality, by a Dick Cheney-type figure, dare I say. What do you think of that, James?
Well, I think that the problem is that although he might carry out their policies in the Middle East, he's not on board with some of their other policies to such a vocal degree that he couldn't go back on them. Now, Hillary is 100% Rothschild agenda. There is not one aspect of their platform she is not on board with. And so let me go through that. Besides the Middle East and the war on terror and the generally being pro-war and pro-Israel, she is pro-gun control. She is pro-GMO. She even hired a Monsanto lobbyist named Jerry Crawford to work with her campaign. She's pro-abortion, as she articulated last night. She's pro-vaccine and any other form of population control. She's all in favor of climate change controls. She's all in favor. This is a big one now. She's in favor of the mass immigration that is destroying Europe right now. And that is a big part of the Rothschild agenda and something that Trump has taken a stand on that would simply be unacceptable for the Rothschilds to accept, and that he has taken such a strong stand on that he couldn't go back on it. And this is one of the reasons why I think they're determined to see Hillary in. But also, Hillary's pro-internet censorship. She's pro the whole transgender thing. And of course, we know she's pro-TPP despite her denials last night. And those are all part of the Rothschild agenda. Now, Trump, on the other hand, has come out strongly against gun control. And he's also been strongly against the constant draining of jobs from America. And I think he's going to have to act on those if he becomes president. So there's at least several points of his program that are not synonymous with the Rothschild platform. But there's several other things that tell us that Hillary is the choice. I mean, the very fact that she got to be senator from New York, where the banking district is, and then secretary of state, these were obviously setups. The fact that when she left the secretary of state position, CBS television began immediately making a TV series that airs on Sunday nights called Madam Secretary, about a blonde female secretary of state, which obviously is supposed to be about Hillary, and it portrays her as beautiful and competent and honest. And so she gets a free weekly commercial from the network television in America every week. Also, George Bush, H.W. Bush, Senior Bush, has now said he's going to vote for Hillary. Now, Richie, this is like a Tory says he's going to vote Labor. I don't ever recall a former president saying he was going to vote against his own party before. I think that's a first in America. And that's a measure of because we know that George Bush is not loyal to the mainstream Republicans. They're loyal to Wall Street and to the bankers. And so that's another measure. But another indicator is the Rothschilds themselves. We had Lynn Forrester de Rothschild, the wife of Evelyn de Rothschild, actually come on Yahoo Financial less than a couple of weeks ago and state that she supported Hillary for president. Now, how many times have the Rothschilds come out from behind their concealment and actually publicly endorse a candidate? The Rothschilds are now publicly endorsing Hillary, and she said that she'd be good for business, and you have to laugh. I mean, all she can do is continue Obama's policies, which have bankrupted the country, driven us into debt, and destroyed our jobs. So how could she be good for business? It's insane. But all of these things are indicating that she is the Rothschild choice. And I don't think they want Trump simply because the populist supporting him would never, he could never go back on some of these promises he's made. I think that, and I'll, of course we see the,
you
the
say
mainstream
that
media.
Now, somebody of your, I cannot believe you just said that. You and I have never argued, but I'm going to argue with you now. I cannot believe that you said a guy who espoused populist positions, if he got elected, he could never go back on those positions. Where have you been the last 50 years, Mr. Perloff? That's what these bastards do. But can I just take you up on the central banking thing? You see, Trump has never spoken out about the creation of money or the Fed. And ultimately, even if Trump had some good ideas, you know, were he to be elected and were he to try and implement those ideas, it wouldn't matter a damn because, you know, he'd still be running to the Fed with cap in hand to borrow money to finance them, to plunge the country even further into debt. I could get behind, you know, somebody like Trump, despite his obvious problems with women and everything else, if, I shouldn't say despite that, I mean, that's a terrible thing, but if Trump were to be talking about the creation of money, the banks, how debt is created, then you'll get a guy like me saying, wow, yeah, I can pay attention to this now. But ultimately, I just don't think it matters, James.
Well, you're absolutely right in that regardless of who wins, the bankers are still running the show. Yeah. The powers that be are still the powers that be. I do want to say one thing, though. I'm very aware that politicians break promises all the time. You know, President Obama said his first day in office, he'd pull the troops out of Iraq. I mean, excuse me, out of Afghanistan. And years and years later, the troops are still there, right? All these promises get broken. But I don't think Trump could go back on his promise on immigration. He's made that the what characterizes his campaign. And I don't see him going back on that and going forward with a Rothschild Zionist type of immigration flow that we see in Europe right now. I just don't see him being able to break that promise. You know, but I agree. He could certainly start, even in the second debate, he started to soften his position on opposing gun control by agreeing with Hillary on called no fly list. So I could see how he could gradually break those promises, but I don't think he could go back on that one. But I agree. You know, he had one tweet about the Fed and people in alt media were very impressed by it. But I said, you know, one tweet does not an anti-bankster make.
No,
you know?
It doesn't.
Ron Paul spent his life fighting the Fed. You know, he had one tweet coming out of Donald Trump. I agree. He would still, the American government would still be the bankster's property. There's no doubt about it. They've been running it for many, many decades.
They need to be kicked into touch. But any president or anybody who's ever attempted to take them on disappears or is murdered. I want to read a few quick more tweets, James. Then I'm going to give you the final word. Thanks for coming on today. Great to get your perspective on been going on. Martin Noakes tweets, surely this is going to be the last US election because we are heading for the Third World War. This is so fixed, says Martin. Spirit Samba tweets, I think Hillary was always the chosen one, but if Trump were to get into office, he would also be controlled by the hidden hand. There's an interesting meme tweeted by Luga. I will retweet that. Colm in Dublin says, it's great to hear Brother Nathaniel mentioned. I wonder, is he the real deal? Ask James. James might give me an answer on that in a minute. Dean Smith is annoyed with me for admonishing James for the use of the word skank. Dean agrees with it. That's putting it politely. I've a fountain of repugnant language I could use. Listen, I love James Perloff. He's a very learned man. I just think that we should never use the sort of language these people use themselves. But I'm not judging James. I just made a point of it. Nick tweets, Richie, she is a completely morally bankrupt person. No respect is due to her, including withholding all derogatory labelling. I'm only suggesting we should hold ourselves to a higher moral standard than these people. I don't think James is so offended that I challenged him on it. Loads and loads of tweets about that. Derek tweets, the whole USA versus Russia thing is a crock. All electioneering bullshit. Neither one will attack the other. It's scaremongering, says Derek. Do you want to pick that point up, James? That's a good point, that. And maybe we'll end on this one. There are people who think, as Derek just articulated there, that neither one of these countries will ever attack the other because of the great, what did we call it, mutually assured destruction. Nobody's going to do it. What do you think?
Well, I do know that in the past, the U.S. has liked to raise the specter of war just before an election because people tend to back the sitting government on those occasions, thinking that we have to show these foreigners that we support our government. But in this case, Hillary is not perceived as strong on foreign policy threats as Trump is. So I think that might backfire. I am concerned about World War III. We have had two world wars, and it may seem like it could never happen. I'm not so concerned, to tell you the truth, that the U.S. military or the Russian military would attack each other. But I wouldn't put it past a nation like Israel, who once flew non-existent planes into the World Trade Center, to perhaps create an image of a Russian plane or an American plane attacking, or an American plane attacking Russia, or a Russian plane attacking America, dropping a nuke and getting a third world war going. I think that it's a possibility. You know, they've had two world wars that gave them the last one gave them the UN and the World Bank and Israel, and I wouldn't put it past them ultimately to generate a world war to get the final global government that they're after. That may be what they think it takes, but I do hope that what we're seeing right now is more bluff and bluster than it is a potential reality.
When I say, James, that your books, and particularly The Shadows of Power, The Council on Foreign Relations, and The American Decline are vital reads, I mean it. Outstanding books. You can find them, folks, on jamesperloff.com. Go to James's website. He posts regular articles about these issues as well. You'll agree with a lot of what he says. Sometimes he won't. That's democracy. James, thanks for taking the time out to do that today. I really enjoyed it, mate. Look after yourself.
Thank you, mate. You're the greatest, and your listeners are the greatest. And I do mean that. I mean, you've got great, intelligent listeners, and I just love the way you share and interact throughout the program. I don't know any other show host who does it like you do, who's constantly reading those tweets that are coming in. It's just fabulous.
You're a gentleman. Thanks so much for saying it. Talk real soon. Thanks, James. James Perloff there on the line to us from his home. He is terrific. The Shadows of Power, amazing, amazing read. It's been widely read. I mean, hundreds of thousands of copies of it have been sold, and the articles are all on jamesperloff.com. Get on there now. What time is it? It's 2.5 minutes to the top of the hour. Here's some Bon Jovi for you, bit of old Bon Jovi. This is called Love for Sale. This will take us to news at the top of the hour on your Richie Allen Show in association with davidicke.com. I'll be back with you in around about 6 minutes time. Put the kettle on, open a bottle of wine, do what you do, and come back, because you don't want to miss Gail Dines in the second hour. Extraordinary woman. All right then, Love for Sale, back in a few minutes.
For critical information ignored by the mainstream media, log on to davidicke.com/headlines now.
From Feature Story News in Washington, I'm Nina Mare Potts with the latest world news. Donald Trump is accusing Hillary Clinton of lying and her supporters of lying as fresh allegations of inappropriate conduct are revealed. Karina Virginia told a very emotional story about how Donald Trump saw her in a parking lot in 1998 after the US Open tennis tournament, walked up to her and grabbed her, leaving Karina shaken and humiliated. Simon Marks reports from Las Vegas on the latest allegations levelled by Corina Virginia.
She broke down in tears during the news conference that she held to make the allegation. The Trump campaign is likely to reject her claims. Donald Trump has insisted that he's never met any of the more than 10 women who are now accusing him of sexual assault, and he insists that their stories are all part of a conspiracy aimed at keeping him out of the White House.
Donald Trump, meanwhile, has told his supporters he will accept the result of the presidential election if he wins. The Republican nominee was speaking a day after refusing to say during the final debate he would accept the outcome, whatever the result. He told supporters in Ohio he also reserved the right to file a legal challenge if he thinks the election is rigged. Trump said he expects to win and therefore would be happy with the result.
I would like to promise and pledge to all of my voters and supporters and to all of the people of the United States that I will totally accept the results of this great and historic presidential election if I win.
The U.S. says it's baffled by an announcement by Philippine President Rodrigo Duterte, who says he has realigned his country with China and separated from the United States. His comments were made during a visit to China and in a week when a dozen anti-American protesters were injured outside the U.S. Embassy in the Philippines. U.S. correspondent William Denzelow reports.
Addressing a crowd of around 200 Chinese and Philippine business people, Rodrigo Duterte announced that the United States has lost and that he's separating from them and realigning with China. Duterte took office on June 30th and relations with the US soured after they criticised his heavy-handed war on drugs. Despite a long-standing dispute with Beijing over the South China Sea, Duterte believes the two nations can improve relations. This week, anti-American protesters convened at the US Embassy in the Philippine capital Manila, calling for an end to what they see as an unequal relationship with the US. 12 were injured when a police van drove into the crowd. William Denslow, New York.
From Bureaus Worldwide, this is FSN.
And you are with Thursday's Richie Allen Show. What did I... Oh, yeah, there you go. You're supposed to put the mic on. There you go. Old school, that. You're with Thursday's Richie Allen Show in association with DavidIke.com. It's exactly 3 minutes past the hour. My name is Richie Allen, welcoming our listeners on alternatecurrentradio.com, on Fab Radio 2 in Manchester. We're on the TuneIn app as well. The TuneIn app. My own website, which is in development and will change and look a lot better soon. It's always great to be with you. Thanks for the tweets. Yes, it is an interactive program and it is great to read the tweets out. Sometimes when we get avalanches of them, I do miss them, but I do my best to read them. The future Mrs. Allen will drop in again in the near future to do them and to read them. But her own job, well, it's a tasking job. Spends a lot of time in her own job and she enjoyed doing it the week before last, but she was knackered at the end of it. But we'll get her back doing it again occasionally as well. Gail Dines joins the programme shortly. She's somebody you don't want to miss. She's outstanding. We're going to talk about what pornography does to our children, to us, to you, to me. It's very serious stuff, this. And I know you'll have a lot to say on it. So again, tweet at Richie Allen Show. Email richie@richieallen.co.uk.
Do you want to release the full potential of your soul consciousness and find out how to experience that power in all areas of your life now? Go to livingasyoursoul.com for free guidance with in-depth how-to articles, free healing meditations of creation recordings, free soul solutions, and much, much more. livingasyoursoul.com, making the profound practical.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now. Broadcasting the information the mainstream media won't touch. This is The Richie Allen Show in association with DavidIke.com.
And you're very welcome back to it at Richie Allen Show on Twitter, richie@richieallen.co.uk. Hi to Tony, hi to Dee, to Hubertes, to Biz, to Jane, and to everybody else who's interacting there, talking to one another and arguing with one another. Not arguing, but debating these issues with each other. To see what people are saying, I've never found a better way of saying this. If you go to twitter.com and you have an account, whether you have an account or not, and where it says search Twitter, put Richie Allen Show without gaps, no spaces, all one word, Richie Allen Show, press enter, and then you will see everything that is tweeted to me. Then it's very easy then to reply to those tweets and to get involved and to debate, to polarise, to theorise, to realise, and all of that. Polarise is probably better. Here's the Bee Gees. This is a song called Alone from 1997. I love this song. I'll be back after this with Gail Dines. She's pretty special as Gail. It's a very serious subject, this, about pornography, where it's going, what it's doing to us. I look forward to your comments. Right, music from the Bee Gees, Alone on the Richie Allen Show. It's exactly 8 minutes past the hour. Welcome back to it. Claire, my producer, tells me, just leave out the at. Forget at. So it's Richie Allen Show, all one word. There's no at. Put it in. No spaces. Then you'll see what everybody else is tweeting. Hundreds and hundreds of tweets about James Perloff and what James was saying about the election. And there are going to be a lot of tweets coming in this hour. I have no doubt about that. I'm delighted, actually, that our next guest is back speaking on my show. She's a wonderful woman, I think. Really, really, really bright and as well briefed on this subject as anybody I've ever come across. She works at Wheelock College in Boston. She's a professor of sociology there. She's the author of, the co-author of Pornography, The Production and Consumption of Inequality, and most recently an outstanding book called Pornland, How Porn Has Hijacked Our Sexuality. That's when I first met her. Was when she published that book. Why is she on the show today? Well, we mentioned on Monday that Pamela Anderson, the actress and former playmate, was on Channel 4 News this week talking about addiction to porn and the damage it does to relationships, but also to young people. It's extraordinary. I mentioned that because I've been speaking about this issue occasionally over the years, I've seen studies from various academic institutions around the world that say that it actually physically changes your brain, addiction to things like pornography. It's serious. Let's welcome to the show, and thanks to her for coming on, an old friend of mine, Gail Dines. Gail, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm fine. Nice to speak to you again.
It's lovely to speak to you again. I'm broadcasting these days from Manchester. I went to the University of Salford to do TV and radio. And of course, you went to Salford.
Of course. Yeah, a long, long time ago. Let's not talk about how many years ago.
It's not that long ago. You've got your camera on. You're not that old. It's not that long ago. Well, look, congratulations on the success you've had since the publication of Pornland and all the many, you know, I know you've been around the country speaking to groups of adolescent boys and girls and older boys and girls, talking to them about this subject. It's a very serious subject. We are past the watershed, but I'm mindful of language and we're not going to, I'm certainly not going to use very strong language. What did you make of Pamela Anderson saying what she said to Channel 4 News on Monday? I was very interested in it. What do you think?
Well, first of all, I live in the States, so I don't get Channel 4, but it was a big story here when she came out with an editorial in the Wall Street Journal. And, I mean, what do I make of it? It's hard to say because, you know, sort of for so many years, Pamela Anderson has been constructed as this image that kind of represents porn culture. And she has been in and out of Playboy. I mean, I salute her in her courage to speak out. She did get some stuff not quite accurately right in the Wall Street Journal. Again, I can't speak to what she said on television. I mean, she seemed to be particularly interested in the effect on men when she spoke in the United States. Was that the same when she spoke in the UK?
Pretty much. Now, she was on with a rabbi whom is taking part in the campaign with her. And, of course, Gail, as you well know, because you've done every news channel in the world, you don't get a lot of time to really kind of lay out what your thesis is. But, yeah, she did speak a lot about men and the loss of love and sensuality. And she talked a lot about how, you know, women, you know, beautiful women, you know, intelligent women, they're lying on their beds and guys are basically hiding in bathrooms looking at their phones and their tablets. All very true, of course, but there wasn't much of a focus on the psychological and physical damage done to women, no doubt about it.
No, and actually, and let's talk about sort of what happens to men, because she's right that we have actually, what's very interesting is that there's research coming out now in the medical journals. And what they're finding is almost unbelievable, is that there used to be pre-internet erectile dysfunction in young men used to be around the 2% level. Since the internet and pornography, it is now in the high 20% level for young men, erectile dysfunction. And they've linked it to porn use. So I think, first of all, certainly what the medical profession is seeing is an enormous shift in men's capacity to have intimate sexual relationships. I was just interviewing some men who had actually got addicted to porn when they were 11. And they spent 10 to 12 years addicted, and now they're all doing kind of work trying to stop other boys getting addicted. And what was very interesting is they were saying that, and I don't know if I can use this word on the radio.
Go ahead, we're past watershed, okay. You can say anything.
All right, so basically they said when they were at the height of their addiction, they were masturbating approximately 15 times a day to pornography. They could maintain an erection to pornography for about an hour. But when it came to women, they said their maximum was around 2 minutes when they were with real women, that they suffered from massive erectile dysfunction with real women. And that's what freaked most of them out, is really the fact is that when it came to being with a woman who they wanted to be with, they couldn't get an erection or at least couldn't sustain it for beyond 2 minutes. So we know that's happening, and it's now the medical journals are beginning to actually capture that in their research. What I really think we need to talk about as well is what happens to women. And this is women in the industry, which is now being documented of all the kinds of diseases they get, from gonorrhea of the eye because of the ejaculation into the eye, to chlamydia of the anus, to all sorts of strain-resistant, drug-resistant gonorrhea, STDs, not to mention post-traumatic stress. Also, what we're finding very interestingly is that when they study women who are partnered with men who are addicted to porn, and often these women do not realize for many, many years just how long their partners have been addicted to porn because they hide it. When they find out, they too suffer from post-traumatic stress disorder. In fact, it is much worse, the effects of finding out your husband or partner is addicted to porn, than it is to finding out he's having an affair. That's what the research is showing.
That will surprise now a lot of our listeners, Gail. Now, you know that a lot of women listening to this, they might think, wow, I don't know about that now. You know, I'd rather think he was reading magazines, watching films, spending time online, but the thoughts of him being with another woman. I'm not disputing you. In fact, I've seen the same study. Yeah. But a lot of our listeners will think, wow, How strange.
Yeah, I know. But that is actually what, when they interview women, and I can tell you, being a public figure and known for this, I get emails daily from women who, and how they often discover it is very interesting. They often will get up in the middle of the night for a glass of water and the husband forgot to close his computer, so they go and close it, and then they find a ton of porn, because these men who are addicted to porn actually also are hoarders of porn, so there's tons and tons of porn on the computer. Another person told me a story of how she found out is her husband's computer started beeping. He was away. She brought in an IT person because her husband was very well off and she was worried he was going to lose money through his stocks and shares as he was actually working on the computer, but he was away. The IT guy comes in and actually tells her she has to go in the other room with the daughter because the FBI is due any minute into house, because he is actually addicted to child pornography. And we're finding that increasing, that many men who are addicted to porn, they go through a number of routes. One very standard route is you move to prostituted and trafficked women. Another one is you go to children. And then there's another one, which is also equally awful, is animals as well. The family pet becomes a sexual abuse victim as well. This is what the studies are showing, that the porn addicts tend to go in often one of three directions or in all of those directions. But the impact on these addicts is amazing. And when I was interviewing these three young men, all of whom spent their entire adolescence, it takes a lot of hours to be masturbating 15 times a day to pornography, is they missed out on all the developmental stages of becoming an adult. They started in early adolescence, around age 11 and 12. They missed out the developmental stages, the emotional, the cognitive, and the psychological developmental stages of middle adolescence, late adolescence, and early adulthood, because they were in their rooms masturbating to pornography instead of, you know, developing relationships with each other, with men, with women, with girlfriends. It absolutely obliterates their life. Also, what we know from the new research coming out on the brain is it has an enormous impact on the brain. The brain actually rewires itself around porn use. And the younger you get into pornography, the more the brain is going to get wired around the pornographic use.
Can I clarify something there with you? And this is just ask questions now. You have plenty of time, by the way. You know that we finish at the top of the hour, so you can stay with me for the top of the hour, because we're going to get a lot of questions. That's entirely up to you, but I'd appreciate you staying with me till the top of the hour, right?
No problem.
What you said there is terrifying to me, because just before we talk about the effect on the brain and dopamine and what's happening, I've read these studies as well. Mm-hmm. This week, knowing I was going to ask you on, what happens is the brain gets flooded with dopamine, but the brain fights back by taking away dopamine receptors. And I learned that dopamine receptors are like little ears on the end of neurons. So with fewer receptors, the brain is putting off the same levels of dopamine in response to porn, but it finds the subject, the patient, the person who's addicted to porn, finds it more difficult to be aroused or excited. And then you move on to more extreme things. Now, I know you know a lot more about this than I do, but you've just said that some of them, and I don't know how many of them, they start moving on to things that include looking at child pornography. That's terrifying, Gail. I mean, that is absolutely terrifying, right?
It is, because they're not pedophiles. Remember, what you're doing now is you're opening up children to a much bigger risk, not only of pedophiles, but of non-pedophile men who, and when I interviewed eight men in Connecticut State Prison a few years ago. All of them were in for downloading child pornography and then for raping a child. The time between their first viewing of child pornography and their actual sexual contact with a child was between 6 months to a year. That's how quick it all kind of just fell apart. And I said to them, are you pedophiles? And they looked at me and they said, of course we're not pedophiles. They were quite insulted. And I said to them, then why did you rape a child? And you know what they said to me? And I swear, this is what they said. They said to me, we got bored. We got fed up with the regular porn. We needed something different. So here they got bored. Meanwhile, they go and completely upend the life of a child, because we know that when you're raped as a child, the long-term consequences are just enormous. And I think what you said about the dopamine is really important. You know, they've done studies where they've compared the release of dopamine of porn addicts, heroin addicts, cocaine addicts, and methamphetamine addicts. What they found is that porn releases more dopamine than cocaine, than heroin, and is on the same level as methamphetamine. Now, this means your own capacity to produce dopamine. And dopamine, for people who don't know, is that kind of hormone that makes you feel good. Okay, so we all have natural dopamine releases that make us feel happy. And now when you start getting addicted to any substance, whether it's drugs, alcohol, pornography, your own capacity to produce dopamine goes down. And it's because of your capacity to produce dopamine that goes down that you need to keep increasing and increasing. That's why with alcoholics, always the amount of alcohol they need to get themselves drunk goes up and up and up. That's why with drug abusers, they need more and more drugs. It's really a biological reality of a reduction in the dopamine releases that you're producing yourself without the drug. So all of this is biologically and medically documented.
Massive amount of comments coming in on this. I'm not going to read them yet. I'll read them shortly. But I just want to remind myself to mention your website. Gail's website is gaildines.com. That's D-I-N-E-S, gaildines.com.
Gail, can I also suggest that you... I also run a non-profit, and it's called Culture Reframed. That's C-U-L-T-U-R-E, as in the culture, reframed, as in reframing a picture, with D on the end, cultureReframed.org. And what we've done is a group of us, academics, activists, medical professionals, we've gotten together to start a non-profit that defines pornography as the public health crisis of the digital age. And we're building programs for parents to help parents build resilience and resistance in their kids to pornography, so that we can get to these kids before they get into trouble with pornography. We're also building programs for medical professionals, because I speak at many conferences with doctors, with therapists, nurses. You would be amazed at how few health professionals understand what's going on with pornography. So what we're doing is we're basically building the public's capacity for understanding this and the healthcare professionals for understanding this, because I get so many emails from parents saying, you know, my kid is addicted to porn, what do I do? And the truth is, there is not enough therapists out there with the specialization and the skills known how to treat porn addicts. And in some cases, I would probably suggest they make it worse, not better.
Brilliant. And my producer, Claire, will tweet out the websites that you just mentioned and your own website as well.
Thank you.
When I was a teenager, my friends, I had a friend, you always have a friend, Gail, and he could get videos. And we used to watch them sometimes. And I can remember them vividly, the videos we used to watch. They were full of cheesy music. They were usually made in America. And they were, they depicted those videos, full nudity and penetrative, I can never say that word, penetrative sex between consenting adults. And there was very little aggressive or forced or violent about it. This is the sort of porn that we used to see as teenage boys, as curious teenage boys. I know we don't have all night, and I know you give lectures and they're amazing and you get time to go into detail. I know you won't get time to go into detail. When did that change, Gail? When did pornography stop being this softish, consensual, kind of lover's guide type stuff, let's put it that way, to this brutally disgusting, animalistic stuff that if you go to any of the top five providers in the world, and I can name them, Pornhub, XXX.com, Xhamster, all of these, on their front pages, on their home pages, brutal, brutal sex. When did it change?
All right, well, first let's begin with you're asking me about my lectures and et cetera. And if people want to hear more of this, that's longer, they can go onto YouTube. They can see my TED talk on YouTube. And I do have longer lectures on YouTube that are about an hour, where it goes more deeply into this. So let's first talk about your sense of it used to be consenting adults and then it moved. First of all, we do not know it was consenting adults. We do not know the histories of those women in the pornography, even pre-internet. What we do know is that women who went into pornography, you were basically had a long history of child sexual abuse, were often poor, were being pimped out, and were often turned into drug addicts by their pimp as a way to keep them enslaved to their pimp. So that was pre-internet. So we cannot assume by any means consent. The second thing is, when did the actual pornography get worse? It got worse without almost overnight in 2000. when the internet became kind of domesticated and into people's homes, the pornographers colonized the internet. Anyone who could afford a camcorder got up and started making porn. And the early days of pornography are very different to today's days of pornography. It got violent extremely quickly. And what you had was paid websites, lots and lots of them, a lot of them produced in the Valley in LA. And they would have individual producers making porn, owning their own websites, and then basically distributing their own porn. And from very early on, and I remember when I was writing my first book, it was a very violent in 2000. So it was astounding how quickly it became banned. Then what happened, which really changed not the content, but the accessibility, was in 2011, when you saw the move towards the free porn sites like Pornhub, YouPorn. Most of the free porn sites are owned by one company called MindGeek, which is housed in Luxembourg with offices in Canada, United States, etc. Now, they control the vast majority of the top visited porn sites in the world, 9 out of 15, which is the free porn sites. Now, what happened in 2011 is when you introduced the free porn sites, it was the equivalent of people standing outside an elementary school handing out free cigarettes. The free porn model was partially devised as a way to bring in kids. Because who's going to go to free porn? People without credit cards. Typically, your younger kids.
Children, yeah.
So it was a business model to get kids young when their brains are rapidly forming. So you bring them in around 11 or 12 when the adolescent brain, especially the male brain, is geared towards risk-taking and novelty. You get them hooked onto porn. So by the time they're 18 and they get their first credit card, you've got a porn addict. You know, pornography is like every predatory industry. Its goal is to get as many addicts as possible because that's how you make the most money. Now, in 2011, what shifted is rather than having to go on the websites and put a credit card in, you could then go on to free websites like YouPorn. And there is anyone who goes on those, and I would suggest if anyone's listening has got a kid of any age, a boy, you need to go on to YouPorn or Pornhub. You need to see this for yourself, because there is nothing I can say over the radio that can explain what I'm talking about.
It's brutal.
But what I do want to say is that the type of pornography that your son or your nephew or just some male kid that you or care about will get to in 15 seconds, and I'm not exaggerating here, he'll put porn into Google, he'll immediately go into the free porn sites. The type of porn, the only type of porn on there, is so hardcore that when you were growing up, you would never have even had access to that in a porn shop. You would have had to know somebody who would deliver that level of hardcore porn. There is no softcore porn anymore on these websites. All softcore porn has migrated into pop culture. So now we are in the midst of a social experiment we've never seen before. We have never brought up boys with 24/7 access to free hardcore porn.
Right, let me jump right in. This is amazing stuff. It's vital stuff. Gail Dines is on the line to us from Boston. Go to gaildines.com. We've tweeted out the other website as well. Why is there no legal responsibility on the manufacturers of this garbage, this disgusting stuff, to prevent youngsters getting it, Gail? They all have phones, they all have tablets. Why have they no responsibility? How have they worked that out?
All right, well, that's actually, if you're going to put any limits on, you need to do it on the distributors, not the producers. It's a separate type of limits. If you really want to have an effect.
I meant the distributors. I meant those who distribute it, yeah.
Right. Because I'll tell you why. Because they have a fantastic, well-oiled PR machine that says that pornography is your right. It's about First Amendment and free speech. They are so smart in the way they have conflated porn with sex, so that if you criticize porn, you're all of a sudden anti-sex, you're anti-free speech. It is actually an amazing question you've just asked. How is it possible that pornography is the only industry that is completely without any regulation? And when I say without regulation, I mean at the point of distribution and I mean at the point of production. So this is what people listening to your radio show should be asking. And now in the UK, you're actually light years ahead of most countries, because what Cameron did was bring in the opt-in, opt-out, where, are you familiar with this? Where this is where now most, when you get a tablet, you get a laptop, for a lot of internet providers, you've actually opted out. You have to pick up the phone and opt into porn. Now, they're going to expand that because there's talk about having age verification in order to get into the porn sites. In the United States, you even bring up the suggestion of any restriction on the porn industry, and you get walloped for being anti-free speech, anti-sex. And I put this down to the very, very well-oiled, well-resourced PR machine that pornography has been pushing and pushing and pushing to say that you have an absolute right to consume porn. Now, the question becomes, what we know is, do children have a right to have their sexuality stolen and hijacked from a group of predatory capitalists whose only interest is in maximizing profit and in destroying the authentic sexuality of these kids? Because that's what they're doing.
Do you know what I'm hearing from people on Twitter? Go to Twitter, folks. Richie Allen Show, all one word. Hundreds of tweets are coming in on this. You know what I'm hearing from people on Twitter? I'm hearing from people going, they can't believe it. A lot of people are saying they didn't know. My producer is saying that her daughter, who's nearly adult age now, she's 17, her daughter is telling her, while listening to this, Mum, you have no idea what's out there. A lot of people are sending us tweets saying they have no idea. What could Gail possibly be talking about? Well, we're past the watershed. We're not going to use bad language. We're talking about women being brutalised, anally, vaginally, brutalised. I mean,
and orally.
And physically, orally, brutalised, yeah.
Especially choked.
Physically destroyed, right?
Biggest single act in all the films is where a woman is being choked with a penis to the point that she's almost vomiting. And her gag reef, you can hear her gagging, which actually, when I'm sort of watching some of this porn, I start to gag just because of the empathy for this woman. So you're talking about really violent, gagging with a penis, and really to add the extra thrill when she's about to really, you know, can't breathe, the tears are streaming down her face, they hold her nose so she can't even breathe. The very, very violent anal sex, which we know has incredible consequences for the health of the women in the pornography. Ejaculation on the face, in the eye, all over the face. I mean, and usually it's one woman being orally, anally, vaginally penetrated by three men, and the last scene is always she's covered in ejaculate. They're spitting in her face, they're pulling her hair, and they're calling her names that I probably cannot say, but I'll say the C word. Is one of the nicest names they call her in pornography. And this is standard. Now, people often say to me, oh, you're exaggerating. It's just the worst. You know what? I wish I was exaggerating. I wish I had picked a few images that I had just happened to come across, and that's all I was describing it. What I am talking about is really the only image that your kid will get to see when they put porn into Google.
You spoke to me a few years ago and you horrified me because I hadn't a clue. I was very honest. Not that I'm looking for any credit or any praise, I'm not, but I was honest and I said, yeah, of course, I've looked at pornography from time to time, and you know, like anybody else, there are interests I have. I'm not lying now, and I wasn't lying then when I said I could never, ever look at something like that and be aroused by that, turned on by that, except that it is disgusting. Women being stepped on, as you said, spat on, these horrible things. And as you said, I'm just going to absolutely endorse what Gail has said here. This is the norm. It's not the exception. This is the norm. And you spoke to me at great length about the emotional and psychological problems those women have when they're cast aside by the industry. Horrendous things that happen to them. But I just want to focus on one thing. A number of studies have said that exposure to this by young boys and girls, Gail, is turning out a whole generation of children who don't or can't express empathy or sympathy. Mm-hmm. Or it's creating numb zombies, effectively, who can't relate to anybody. You touched on this earlier on, didn't you? Difficulty in relating to people, in understanding people. Now, you know, Gail, you know damn well who I am. I'm a conspiracy theorist. Is there a more sinister agenda behind this? Is that part of some plan, that, to turn out a generation of people, like, you know, completely unfeeling, uncaring?
You know what? I mean, if there is, I'm not aware of it. I'm a great conspiracy theorist myself, but, I mean, I don't know about it. I think it's a much simpler argument to say that a lot of predatory men who themselves have probably got no empathy, no capacity for intimacy, sort of figured out a way to make a lot of money. A lot of this is about making money. And the truth is, pornography sites get more visitors each month than Netflix, Amazon, and Amazon combined. Okay, so we're talking a huge amount of viewers. And when they go on the free porn sites, by the way, then they go on to paid porn sites afterwards, because what often happens is they track the consumers, and then they're constantly popping them up with pop-ups with paid porn sites. So the pornography industry is making a lot of money. Also, the webcams that are on the free porn industry, the webcam girls, who are the biggest group, is called Live Jasmine. They're making a lot of money. So it's really about making money. Now, the problem that you brought up, which I think is central, let's just think about this for a minute, about not bringing up a generation of boys with very little empathy. So let's think of the 11 or 12 year old boy. You go on to pornography and you've got no history of having sex. This is your first introduction to sex. You've got no repertoire of sex to pull from, to compare to say, oh, you know what? My girlfriend, wife, whatever, doesn't like this, because you're new to sex. You put in porn into Google and you think maybe you're going to come up with breasts, maybe vagina, maybe sex, who knows? What you're not expecting at that age is to be catapulted into a world of sexual violence. So what happens is this boy, 11, 12, goes into the free porn sites, he's aroused, he's got an erection, and instead of seeing breasts and vaginas or whatever, he's watching literally torture. Now, he's aroused, but of course he's aroused because he's at that age where he's sexually interested, which is how the pornographers hijack the developmental level of boys. So he starts to masturbate. And I've interviewed so many boys around this, and I can tell you what happens is that they are, when they're done, they feel self-disgust, they feel shamed, they feel sullied, they feel dirtied. And in fact, what I would argue as someone who studies sexual trauma is they have actually been traumatized by the porn industry. Now, what we know about trauma is that when you are traumatized, if you do not deal with the trauma, and of course these boys are not dealing with it because they're not telling anybody what's happened to them, that they've been on these porn sites and masturbated to the most horrible images of violence, then you keep going back to the site at which trauma happened. So they keep going back because you go back in the hope that there'll be a different outcome. Of course, what is really happening is they're going back to the site at which they're traumatized and they're digging the trauma deeper into the synapses. This is how you create the addicts. This is a very clever business model, because I do not believe, look, I'm the mother of a son. I think of my boy when he was 11. Had he gone into that site and seeing that, I cannot imagine the impact it would have had on how he thought about himself, how he thought about me as his mother, how he thought about all the girls in his life. What would have been his effect? And then when I was writing Pornland, and I was thinking, why do these boys stay on this site? Why don't they run away screaming? I started to read what it says on the site. Very, very clever. So you've got these images of women being tortured, and it'll say things like, are you man enough to watch this? We're giving you what you want. This is what real men want. Now, you tell me, what 11 or 12-year-old boy is going to say, no, I'm not man enough for this? Because that is exactly the same age that he's developing his identity as a male in this culture. So he's being traumatized by the industry to say, this is the way you get into masculinity. This is a kind of hazing into masculinity, is pornography. This is the price you pay to belong to this club we call masculinity.
We've had hundreds of tweets, Gail. There's so many of them. I'm going to read a few out in a few minutes. Before I read a few out then, and I know you'll want to jump in when I'm reading them, but I'll ask you to wait till I get through about 10 or 15 of them. But before we get to the tweets, what about Dame Jenny Murray suggesting that sex education be scrapped in schools and that children watch and analyse pornography instead? Is she out of her mind, Gail? Where's that coming from?
Well, first of all, I do believe that we should be talking about pornography in schools. We shouldn't be showing it. That's ridiculous, right? There's nothing to be gained by showing kids pornography, because the images are so powerful. We should be talking about the impact of pornography. We should be showing very simple images of what happens to the brain during pornography use. But, you know, kids are way more sophisticated than we give them credit for. We should be talking about what happens to their capacity for intimacy. We should be talking about what happens to them in relationships. And then I think as you get older, and I do this in my classes, and I'm a college professor, not a high school teacher, I show not moving images, but still images. And what's really interesting when I go across the country in the United States lecturing, and also in the UK and Sweden and Norway, is when I show the images of pornography, I only show still images, but they're still very hardcore. You know, it is often the first time any of the men in the audience has ever looked at pornography without an erection. And it is shocking. It is shocking because you see what happens when, you know, that joke about men can only have two heads and they think with their small one rather than their big one. There's some truth to that, actually, neurologically, that when men are aroused, their frontal lobes tend to shut down so that they're masturbating to images that, were they not aroused to, would actually probably disgust them. So when I go into these college arenas, and there's often 500 to 1,000 students, I am showing men the pornography that they have seen 1,000 times. But you know what? They've never seen it. They've been too aroused. And when they look at that image of that woman with the semen smeared all over her face, crying, you can see, because I'm on the stage and I'm looking out at them, you can see the impact it has on them. It is profound because they are getting to see what they're masturbating to. And when I was interviewing these three guys who had been porn addicts, I said to them, at what point after your erection and ejaculation did you look at the image that you were masturbating to and feel that, oh, I can't believe I'm doing this? And they said they didn't even have to finish ejaculating to feel the self-disgust that they felt. So I think, getting back to your question, for older kids, and I think there would need to be a lot of research done about what age this would work, we should be showing stills, never movies, but explaining, look at her. Look at her face. Now you tell me, do you want to be the kind of man and boy who gets off on a woman being tortured? And I have to believe that I have faith in the majority of men and boys to say no. They do not want to be the kind of men or boys who get off on women and girls being tortured. So you have to somehow get in there and pull out the capacity for empathy that we know these boys have, but which is being destroyed by the pornographers. I'm
going to read a few tweets, and then there's an amazing question which has been asked by about 15 different people. What the hell can we do? Because of this, you know, technological revolution we're in the middle of. Catherine tweets, and she tweeted this about 20 minutes ago. I'm sorry for getting... I'm not interrupting Gail because it's vital stuff that, and the time is short. But I'm going to read a few tweets now. Catherine says, it could be worse finding your partner is into porn than having an affair, because the women have no flaws like real women. That's a really interesting comment, that. Faisal tweets, I call it sexual connoisseurism. It divorces sex from any emotional component. I think actual paedophiles are rare, or pedophiles are rare. Derek tweets, paternal control is the only answer for younger minds. When you are 18 plus, it should be up to the individual, says Derek. But we're going to come back to that in a minute, and about the easy access of it and what parents can do as well. Let me just scroll up there. Lone Horse tweets, erectile dysfunction, exclamation mark. There is a huge feminization of men from estrogenic contaminants, media, politics, technology and magic. I know you're going to want to jump in there, but hang on, Gail. I know you'll want to come back on that, but a lot of people believe that. I have a different opinion than that, but a lot of people do believe that. Luga tweets, the outer is the reflection of the inner. Our inner worlds are more depraved than ever. Spiritual, there's a lack of family values, etc., says Luga. Let me have a look. Gail tweets that she can't watch music videos. Some of them are so, presumably so graphic. And there's so many more of them coming in. You want to pick up that point about the feminization of men, right? What do you think?
Well, you know what? Given that you've had so many great questions, that is so stupid that it's hard for me to even talk about, right? The feminization of men is not the problem. It's the hyper-masculinization of men that is the problem. And that's what pornography does. It hyper-masculinizes men. So this isn't, and if that man, whoever he was, is arguing about it's, men being feminized, his argument, his real fight is with the pornographers who are making him hyper-masculinized, which is going to cause erectile dysfunction. So his fight is with the pornographers, not with me.
A lot of people do share that opinion, though. A lot of men do. A lot of learned men.
It's wrong. It's nothing to do with the feminization of men. What's happening to men, if we want to talk about how they feel loss of power, is a lot of the loss of power is because we've had such massive shifts in, you know, offshore production, that men are losing their jobs, they're losing their role of breadwinners. That's something to be discussed, is how men are losing their identity as men. That I would agree with. But to argue that somehow feminists, so it's about estrogen, that is too even ridiculous to have on a serious discussion. I think some of the arguments about pedophilia is rare. It's not that rare. First of all, we know there's it does exist. What I'm talking about is not pedophilia. What I'm talking about is your non-pedophile male, and we can very easily figure out who's a pedophile or not, because when you read the literature on pedophilia, pedophiles usually start offending around 14 or 15, and normally they have hundreds and hundreds of victims in their wake. The Jimmy Savile case, I think they're looking into something like 1,500 kids he abused over his lifetime. That's not always abnormal for pedophiles. The men I interviewed in prison who were not pedophiles, and I can tell you they're not pedophiles because they'd never touched a kid till their 40s, and they said they had more sexual interest in women than children. It's just they wanted to try something new. Those are the men that we have to be worrying about, because we're expanding the number of men who are going to sexually abuse children. But we do know that pedophile is certainly not as common as these men now who are raping children who are not pedophiles.
That's interesting. Those who prey on children, and I mean, I had Michael Manfield QC on the program a couple of weeks back. Michael is convinced that there is an epidemic of child sex, and amongst the privileged classes or the elite classes or the wealthy classes. This is the human rights barrister. I absolutely share that opinion from my investigations over the years. Paedophilia and paedophile rings are not rare, and they are happening and they're serious. There's no doubt about that. Gail Natalie just tweeted. It's a strange one, says Nat. Now, I know Natalie. She runs a pub. Young woman. She's a singer. She says, I've had a guy who said he was too in love with me to have full sex. I think I might understand now, she says, ?
You know what? Because he felt from his porn use that women are filthy, dirty sluts, and he couldn't bear to put her in that category. The women that he has any sexual involvement with in pornography, he views as sluts. And all other things that they call them in pornography. He didn't want to put her in that category, which is why he didn't want to have sex with her. It makes perfect sense to me, that.
Brilliant. Dean tweets, tongue-in-cheek, Dean, but there's a serious point here. He says he remembers watching a famous film about bestiality many years ago. It did shock me, but I never wanted to, you know, engage in intercourse with animals. But that would have been a very rare thing. I remember,
that's the thing.
Now, of course, these particular sites that we mentioned earlier on, you know, through these sites, it's very easy if you wanted to find images of people engaging in very graphic and very disgusting acts with animals. But that would have been a rarity. I think what you would say to Dean, I suppose, is you weren't being exposed to that all the time, Gail.
No. What I'm saying is you're really reaching the bottom of the bottom when you're getting into that.
No, the point I was making is
slippery slope.
Down
a slippery pole of addiction when you're reaching that. But let me say something very interesting about that happened to me. So, you know, I obviously am on the porn sites a lot when I'm writing and reading about this, and I try and just do it in clumps so I'm not spending too much time on them. But I noticed that when I get into looking at teen sex, because a few years ago I was the expert witness for the U.S. Department of Justice in a case against the porn industry, and I was looking at teen porn a lot. And so, of course, I was being followed, you know, by the porn industry, as they do on the free porn sites, And they have obviously had my profile of probably a 30-year-old male who was bored and was looking at teen porn. Now, obviously, I get spam all the time from the porn industry. But what I've noticed, and this is really interesting, and this is happens every time, when I start researching teen porn on the regular free porn sites, my spam changes every time to bestiality. It's the only time I ever get spam, because what they're saying is, this is a man who is bored. He's looking for something new. And so I get the bestiality. Now, it's a minority. I don't want us to get hung up on this.
Yeah.
That makes no sense. But it is what I've heard from therapists, is the family pets and other stuff. So we do know that occurs. But believe me, when you've reached that point, you've been into addiction for a long time. I think the most important question you've had here is, what can we do about it? That's what I get all the time. This is why I ask people to go onto Culture Reframed. We are building now. We are about a year and a half old. We are, as I say, we are the only group in the world that is a public health nonprofit building programs for parents and for health educators. Now, if people would like to support us, and I'm telling this unashamedly, we need financial support to build our programs. People would like to donate. There's a donate button on our website. Because we're using very skilled consultants to build our curriculum. At the moment, we have three different consultants building curriculum to help parents so that you can go on our site, and we're building what are called best practice conversations. Because really, how do you start the conversation with your 12-year-old, which really should be starting earlier at 8, about pornography? So what we've done is we have literally scoured the world to find the best parent educators around this. And we ended up in Australia, and we have now partnered with a group in Australia who specialise in writing curriculum for parents around how to do best practice conversations for kids around pornography. We've also scoured the world to find best medical experts to help us build curriculum for therapists, for nurses, and for paediatricians. Because the other thing that's very interesting is that, where is the one place most kids end up at? Paediatricians. So what we're going to do is, we are going to build a whole network of programs for paediatricians about what to look for potential porn addiction. And actually, tomorrow, I fly to San Francisco, and I'm giving the keynote address to the American Academy of Pediatrics, which is going to be 7,000 paediatricians, and I'm going to be talking about pornography in children. This is the first time they have really taken this on in this country. Now, I'm thrilled about it, but that has to tell you, they must be seeing stuff in their offices around children and pornography.
Of course they are. Of course they are.
Because I would not have been invited to do a keynote address 5 years ago there. I was kept at arm's distance. And the fact that now I'm being invited to all of these main medical conferences, telling you, is that their offices are full. I was at a conference recently of therapists, and I said to them, how many of you right now, and there's 300 therapists in the room, have offices full of porn addicts? And every single hand went up. Every single hand.
Gail, we've got exactly 45 seconds left. I'm going to give you the last 45 seconds. There are a lot of parents listening to this with young children. I'm not making that up. We're getting tweeted by them. This is the most listened to independent radio show in Europe. We've had about 500 tweets during this program. Give, in the 45 seconds left, give a bit of hope to parents with young children. Give them something to hang on to.
The only hope we have is to build a movement that takes our kids back from the pornographers. They have hijacked our kids' sexuality, and we have to build a movement to take it back. This is why we started cultureReframe.org. We need to start an organization. And I want to say the last thing, we have handed our children over to the pornographers. This is a mass dereliction of duty on the part of adults. We have to now stand up and say, not on our watch are we going to let this continue. We're going to stand together, build a movement, and get our kids back from the pornographers.
Gail, it was terrific to speak to you again after a few years. Thanks so much for doing it. And stay in touch. You're always welcome back on the show. I mean that.
Thank you very much for having me on the show.
It's extraordinary work you're doing. Thanks. Marvellous. What a marvellous woman Gail Dines is. Pornland, How Porn Has Hijacked Our Sexuality is her most recent book, and it's, as far as I'm concerned, it's the standard bearer. The most well-briefed woman or man anywhere you'll hear on this particular subject. It's deadly serious. Go to GailDines.com, and all the links that Gail mentioned have all been tweeted out by Claire, our producer. That's pretty much it for the show. I'm going to take a very quick break, though. Back to wrap up after that.
Do you want to release the full potential of your soul consciousness and find out how to experience that power in all areas of your life now? Go to livingasyoursoul.com for free guidance with in-depth how-to articles, free healing meditations of creation recordings, free soul solutions, and much, much more. livingasyoursoul.com, making the profound practical.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
Now, our Aaron is listening, Aaron Calland, and he said, Richie, this is serious, this. The porn industry is evil, but this stinks of problem, reaction, solution, and what Gail is doing is the solution. She wants parents to talk to eight-year-olds about porn. Parents should take responsibility and make sure their kids don't have access to it. She'll have every people in every school in the Western world chatting to kids as young as eight about porn. I disagree with Aaron here. When we talked about the peer, Dame Jenny, what's her face, Gail said absolutely not, children should not be shown porn. But I think where she's coming from, and I agree with her, is that the horse is bolted from the stable. Yes, absolutely do everything you can to make sure that it's difficult for your child to see this sort of pornography, which is the only pornography, on their phones or on their tablets. But the fact is, they're getting it elsewhere. They're getting it when they're with their peers in their peer groups. They're getting it at school. You know, there's always somebody who will have a phone or will have a laptop or will have a tablet. Gail Dines doesn't want, she wants to take this sort of thing away from children. They don't want children to be chatting about porn. They want to make children aware of what's out there and the dangers of what's out there and why they should avoid it. I think that's what I've always taken from Gail anyway. Look, that's it for the programme. I've no time to say any more. Thanks so much to our guest, James Perloff, and to Gail Dines. I'll be back with you tomorrow, Friday, at noon. That's noon UK time, noon BST, for a roundup of the week's news. That programme live tomorrow at noon. Coming up in a couple of minutes after me is the latest wonderful healing meditation from our good friend Kim Hutchison at livingasyoursoul.com. It's the Channels of Illumination meditation called Your Soul's Love Pattern of Reality. Kim follows this. And once again, I want to say a big happy birthday to our friend Mark Bajerski. Leaving you with this from The Pale. I've played this a week or so ago, but I love it. Not heard it for so long. Thanks to Claire, to Aaron, to Simon. Thanks to you for listening. Join me tomorrow at midday. If you missed that program, it'll be on podcast very quickly. So until then, bye for now. Look after yourselves and one another. Father's clothes, I am the bird.
is the reason I